Good morning. This is Darrell Gontry, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM, located on the campus of Seton Hall University. I am so pleased to have a fellow board member on our interview today, Mr. Mark Licorice, who is on the board of the Global DARE Foundation. Mark, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Thank you. I should say my name, Mark Licorice. I live in the United Kingdom, in a little place called Shropshire, which is very near Wrexham, which everybody in the world has now heard of. I'm 71 years of age. I am widowed. I am a Rotarian and will be president of Rotary next year. I'm also a board member of an academic trust, which has 10 schools and is one of the most successful academies in Shropshire.
Wow, that is awesome. And early on, what was your educational background?
My educational background is I spent 42 years as a nurse. So I gained my qualification as a nurse, which is degree equivalent today. And I also have a health and safety degree as well.
All right. So, Mark, for our audience, share with us your journey. How did you first learn that you had the Refsum disease? And, of course, how has it affected you?
I had Refsums when I was 24 years of age. However, it started long before that. When I was about 10, I noticed the stars disappeared out of the sky, which I thought, and I became predominantly night blind. I was always clumsy in school when it came to physical exercise. I also had a school medical, and I can remember the doctor sitting there looking at my feet for a long time, and he said there was something wrong with him, but he couldn't work it out what. And that was it. And I was let go. It wasn't till I got to about 16 when I had my eyes tested, and I again complained that I couldn't see out of the corners of my eyes. And the optician told me that was a load of rubbish at my age. I shouldn't worry about myself. And it wasn't a problem. He looked in my eyes, but he couldn't see anything. And I was 22. I had a road traffic accident. I hit a car coming at me from the side. I never saw it. Following that, it worried me that I went off to a cardiac arrest one day, which was on the top floor of the hospital, and we used to have to run, and I couldn't run. I just lost the ability to run. I got seen by one of the registrars who I was quite friendly with, who put me in touch with his consultant. And he agreed there was something wrong with my nervous system, and there was also something wrong with my eyesight. And he suggested I go and see a professor of neurology in Stoke-on-Trent, which was one of the large centres of excellence. I was in and out of there for a few months, and one of the senior house officers who used to look after me, he spent a lot of time talking to me, and I kept telling him it was something I felt that I was eating that made me feel ill. And he suggested that I could have a metabolic disease. He suggested this to the professor, and the professor told him that was rubbish. Do you realize how rare Refsum's disease is? Undeterred, the said doctor sent a specimen of blood to London, had it tested. It came back in a week, and the prof was back at the bottom of my bed to tell me I have Refsum's disease. And that was the start of the circus for me, because they hadn't seen one in this country for well over 10 years. So I was paraded in front of neurologists all over the country.
And that was at the age of, did you say?
24.
24. And being that it was such a rare disease, did they have any ideas about foods that you should eat or shouldn't eat at that time?
In the early days, there was a special diet. There was a Dr. Gibbard in London and a Sigmund Refsum, obviously, in his clinic in Stockholm. And they had developed this very special diet. And in essence, we used to drink a liquid supplement, which was basically made up of sweetener, kalanutrin, which was a carbohydrate, and water. And we used to drink a liter and a half of this a day, and we used to have multivitamins. They also suggested we could eat white meats, we could eat root vegetables, potatoes, and skim milk. Diet was in those days extremely restrictive, and I weighed very little, 9-10 stone if I was that, and I wasn't putting any weight on, but after 8 weeks on this diet, I felt stronger. My muscle tone in my legs improved quite considerably, and I began to put on a little weight.
And you had mentioned early on in your youth, you were at the doctor, and it was something about your feet. What did you notice then, and what have you learned since then as to how Refsum affected your appendages?
Well, with Refsum, you have skeletal abnormalities, and I've always taken my feet as what they are. But when you see other people who have normal feet and can move their toes, you realize that there's something wrong. And also, being a nurse, I also began to realize, knowing a lot more about anatomy than I did when I was younger, then there was obviously a problem. And I've got one or two other exostoses on my skeleton, which again are common for patients with Refsum's disease.
And Mark, I have to say, I have to applaud you because even with the issues with your balance and your eyesight, you became a nurse.
I became a nurse. It didn't affect me too much. For the first 25 years, I was pretty good because, bear in mind, when I got diagnosed, I already was a nurse. So that helped. And I managed to do that for 30 years. And then my eyesight began to get a lot worse, and I had to have a cataract removed. I used to get very tired, and it was suggested that I take a desk job. A, that was good for me. It put my money up because I became a manager. So therefore, it helped my pension. And I did that for 12 more years before I retired at 60.
But it's just commendable before you realized that you had Refsum, given the challenges of your eyesight with all the studying and the reading. How did you just naturally overcome that?
I guess sheer bloody-minded determination, because whilst I knew there was a problem in the early days, I didn't know what the problem was, but I was still reasonably well. And I had a lot more mobility, and I could see a fair bit more than I can now. So as time has gone by, the mobility has got worse, and the eyesight is down to 1 degree in one eye. So that makes it a bit difficult to do all the things that you want to do. But there's nothing wrong with the brain.
Excellent. And you're using those brains for the global DARE board. I just want to say for the audience, DARE means defeating adult Refsum everywhere. How did you and Christy DeMarco, the founder, how did you learn of each other and get involved?
Well, it was a bit by chance. My brother had been in contact with her because he also has Refsum's disease, and he thought I might like to get involved in a couple of these community Zoom meetings we have. And I got talking to Christy, and we exchanged ideas, and she asked me, because she was looking for board members, would I like to join the board? So I said yes. Whilst I think I can safely say I have a pretty good in-depth knowledge of Refsum's disease, I also suffer from it. And I guess with a medical background as well, you understand how it all works and why it all works. So that makes you quite useful when you try to explain to people in layman's terms, because that's what we have to do, is how Refsum's affects them. The other side of that is I'm able to have the right sort of conversation with clinicians about Refsum's disease and explain it to them. And I've spent quite a lot of time talking to different clinicians and groups of people, podiatrists, optometrists, to try and encourage them to and teach them about Refsum's disease so they keep their eyes open for people with foot deformities and poor eyesight.
And your participation, and I know this firsthand, being a fellow board member, is really excellent and phenomenal, and I'm always learning from you. You also, one of your activities on the board is that you oversee the community groups, correct? In the UK?
I'm part of the ambassador program.
Ambassador program.
The idea is to gain an ambassador in every country where we have Refsum's disease, because what we'd like to ensure is that we get level playing field treatment across the world, because whilst this is a rare disease, and best guess would say 1 in a million, 7,000 people approximately in the world that may have or have Refsum's disease. And there may be a lot more people who are undiagnosed because people have not made the connection between all of the other symptoms and Refsum's.
Right. And as a community, as the medical community, how can we get the refs, in your opinion, how can we get the Refsum disease marker to be part of a standard blood test?
The simple blood test is a start to do a blood test for a long chain fatty acid. That is always a clincher. And then the other one, of course, is doing some DNA as well. Now, there is a scheme in the United Kingdom where they have started doing DNA testing, or are about to start DNA testing on newborn babies. You can't possibly screen everybody, but anyone with a diagnosis of retinitis pigmentosa should be automatically screened with DNA testing and a long chain fatty acid blood test, just to exclude that they have Refsum's.
Wow. And in your experience, what will it take to get the medical community to adopt that best practice?
Depend upon the country you're in. I guess some of it's down to money. And if the trouble with Refsum's, it's not a high profile disease.
Right.
It doesn't attract enough attention because it's so rare. And of all the leukodystrophies, Refsum being one of the rarest, then people are happy to pour money into lots of other things. If you take diabetes, the world is awash with money for diabetes, but not for Refsum's. And it's about sharing the cash out, really. And if we make a big enough noise, it is hoped that people will begin to take notice. And every person you talked about it is one more person who shares the knowledge.
And I guess the other part of that is expanding the scholarly research about the Refsum disease.
And I guess I believe that research is necessary and possible, and obviously treatments that are suggested are expensive, but it is for the benefit of the Wrexham community, and everybody is important. And I guess at my age, it's probably too late. I'm never going to be cured of Wrexham's, but anything that I can pass on or teach other people that may help to find that cure for future generations to prevent them developing full-blown Wrexham's, going blind and having peripheral neuropathy and basically having a poor quality of life.
And so this type of awareness, Mark, what are some of the key things that you would like to see the medical community and the clinical community to do to provide more awareness about Wrexham?
Well, I guess we could do more seminars. I mean, we do our Dare Fest, and that attracts a fair few people. The suggestion that we do more social media and podcasts, again, spreads it out there, because if you look at some people, they have followers of over 1 million people. If we can achieve something like that for the Wrexham community, then I actually think we can make a serious impact in spreading the word.
And that is the hope, that with this podcast, this broadcast and podcast, because we do have the Global Dare Fest coming up next month, and we encourage folks to participate in that. And so currently, what is happening with the ambassador program in the UK? What activities?
Well, at the moment, there are two of us. There is me and Liz, and we sort of carved the country in half between us. And whilst Liz looks after the south, and I guess I've got the north, and I use the opportunity, because I've got a network of people now, to talk to clinicians. Every new clinician I see, they get a leaflet. I've educated the local GPs. I've also done all the local podiatrists and the ophthalmologists, also the optometrists, because one of my relatives actually runs an optometrist, and he is the chairman of the local branch of the optometrists. So he uses it as a springboard and has given a talk across the whole of the West Midlands.
Very nice. Wow.
And that's the only way you can do it. The only problem with our ambassador program is you've got to have the credibility to have a conversation with a clinician. And that's difficult, because it's, should we send them an email? They probably go in the bin and nobody ever reads them. Should you do a cold call? Again, can't get past the secretary sometimes. And I guess it's not so bad in the UK, but if we're doing this abroad, I guess it's a whole lot harder.
That's right. That's right. You know, it just takes a coordinated and consistent effort. And we're hoping that the Global Dare Fest, which is coming up in June, on June 10th through the 18th, that folks will register. And also, this is part of our fundraiser as well. And the thing that I love about our fundraisers is that the money goes completely to the goals of the organization, and that is to our food testing program. Tell us about the food testing program, Mark, and how it has helped you.
The food testing program allows an expansion of what was a pretty meager diet, and I actually think now what we are allowed to eat is pretty good. We still get queries from people, well, why can't I eat that? And my view is, if it's not on the list, you don't eat it. And if you've got something that's high in value on that list, then you need to remember that. So if you have that high, you're going to have to be a bit lean for the rest of the day, because we can get rid of so much phytanic acid naturally. But there is an amount which begins to store in your body, and obviously causes damage. So yes, the more foods we can put on this list, the more varied people's diet becomes. And again, it's about not just the Western diet, because other countries don't have the same sort of foodstuffs as we eat. So we have to be seen to make sure that we cover all of our community.
And it's the phytanic acid that is in these foods that causes the Refsum disease.
Correct. It's has an affinity for your nervous system. It is accumulated in your body fat. You can excrete approximately 12 milligrams a day via the, let me think, a day without anything over 12 milligrams that you take in will set in you, will be stored in your body. If you get gastroenteritis or you become severely ill, you need to keep hydrated, keep the emergency regime, and seek medical attention, because you will, A, all of your stored phytanic acid is actually released into your bloodstream and can make you quite poorly.
Wow. Mm. I just want to point folks to our website, which is defeatadultrefsumeverywhere.org. Also, our DARE Fest is going to be June 10th to the 18th. There's many different ways that people can participate. They can participate in the 5K activity. They could participate in the diet challenge and all of the other activities that we have going on for DARE Fest. And Mark, from a personal standpoint, what would make you very proud as a Global DARE board member to see Global DARE to achieve over the next couple of years?
A simple blood test, which gets a result in a few days. At the present moment in time, it takes a long time. It can take weeks. Now, in that time, you can become quite poorly. You need the result fairly quickly. So if we can get a decent blood test, that would be one thing. The second thing is that we are doing research in different types of drug therapy, because this is probably going to be the quick fix. We have CRISPR therapy on the horizon, but that's going to take an awfully long time and will prove extremely costly. And at the present moment in time, I guess there's not enough of us to want to encourage anybody to look down that avenue.
Wow. And the blood tests. Currently, you mentioned in that you would like to see it to be timely. Is there any particular reason why the blood tests to test for Refsum takes an extra amount of time?
Well, because of the cost, they sometimes tend to batch test them. So they save them up and do a few. And depend upon where you send them, because not every lab in the UK does them because of the cost. And I think there's one in Bristol, there's one in Manchester, and there's obviously one in London that I know of. And the problem then is the result comparable with all three labs? Because there is an element of error, and you have to consider that. Is there anything else within a Refsum patient that you could use as a marker, which is far easier to detect? I suggested that we could possibly use something like we do for diabetes with a test strip and a meter. Unfortunately, that doesn't lend itself particularly well to Refsum's disease, which is a shame, because that would be ideal.
Right. And I guess, and to your point, that because it's such a rare disease, the pharmaceutical companies haven't put forth the commercial muscle, if you will, to create a simple test.
Yeah. But the spin-off from Refsum's finding something to cure is it may have implications for many of the other leukodystrophies.
Yes.
If nobody else puts what would you do if you put one of the other leukodystrophy types on Refsum's diet? Would it help them?
Right.
You know, this is what you have to consider. If you find a cure for something, or you find something that is an effective treatment, you may have spin-offs for other related storage diseases.
The adjacent diseases, yes. That's a brilliant thought there, Mark.
Trouble is people become blinkered and narrow, you know. Well, this is this disease and that's that disease. Yes, but it all affects your metabolic processes. And you look at Refsum patients, they will develop problems with their heart. They'll develop problems with their kidneys. And it's keeping all of these things together to make sure you're not just looking after the one bit, you're looking after the whole patient. And this is what some clinicians forget. We'll say, oh, we'll just do that. No, you can't do that. The patient had Refsum disease. There are other implications. Starving people for surgery is not good for Refsum patients. You have to put them on a regime to make sure that they don't break down their body fats. And these are the things that it's encouraging clinicians to look at the whole patient and the whole syndrome, not just a little bit that they're looking after.
Right. Because it is all ultimately tied together within the health of each individual.
Absolutely.
So, Mark, we're winding down. We have a couple minutes left. And I'd like to give you the opportunity to share any other knowledge or any appeal that you would like to make to our audience.
I've lived with Refsum's disease now for well over 40 years. Whilst the onset of the disease was obviously started when I was a child, and it took a while to diagnose, which is common, the fact that I had the diet has given me a longer span of life than I would have had I not been diagnosed when I was. So any patient, the sooner we can treat them, the sooner we can identify the disease, the better their quality of life will be.
Very nice. And as folks around the world are going to hear about the Global DARE Patient Outreach Ambassador Program, is there a particular person that they should contact if they want to get involved with the Ambassador Program?
Well, there's the Global DARE website. The ambassadors are there, and I think there is a contact detail on there for people who would be interested. I did a little bit of work with Susan Kurnoff about looking at an email which we could send to our ambassadors that would encourage them, or send out to encourage ambassadors, should I say.
Very good. Very good.
And hopefully, it's a daunting prospect. Do I want to be an ambassador? Why would I want to be an ambassador? You know, it's going to take time and all the rest of it, but it's something you do every day. You live with the disease. If you can help someone that's newly diagnosed, you're making a contribution.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for taking the time to share your experience, your history, and your thoughts about what we can do as a community to help those patients who have Refsum and help those who don't know that they have it to determine if they have it so that they can get the right treatment. I want to thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Darrell.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up this week on Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM. I want to again thank our guest, Mr. Mark Licorice, board member of the Global DARE Foundation, as our in-studio guest. Want to wish you to have a great weekend, but remember, leadership begins with you. Have a great day.